I used to love the Go-Go Gophers. I just love the one who's whoopie doopie. We have fun.
That was the first thing I thought of when I saw the title of the Gophers from Gophers. Ohio.
Oh, now I get you. It took me a minute because I'm not that bright to actually put that connection together. Now I'm going to be thinking of that one when he has contact with the Gophers. They're going to all be talking like that one.
Right, exactly. Him say, him going to go down Gopher hole.
You want to make plan? You could never get away with doing something like that today without getting ridiculous criticism.
Oh, forget it. They'd crucify you for that.
But that's why it's fun.
Very fun.
This whole city used to be filled with humans. Families, brothers, fathers. My grandfather worked for a secret organization. When the disaster struck, he sealed us in a protected chamber called Command D. And yeah, that's how I got my name. He and I were the last survivors. We stretched the supplies as long as we could. We had a few books, some info reels. He taught me all he could. Until he was my only companion, my only friend. His final words were, "You were the last boy on Earth, Commandy. For the sake of humanity, you must survive."
If we're going where I think we are, I doubt any of us will survive.
Journey with them now. Back to the bins.
How was your Christmas?
It was very nice, actually. It was, you know, it was the nicest thing about it. It was, you can't hear me? I see your microphone is marked as muted.
You cut out. There was like a staticky noise and...
But am I back?
Yes. Now you're back.
I'm back. You're black. He's mad. I'm mad. That was in Lethal Weapon 2? Yes. Or is it I'm back, you're black?
We're back. We're bad. You're black. I'm bad.
I'm mad.
Mad Max. Mad. That was
a play on Mad Max.
Those movies were great. Well, at least until like the fourth one.
Yeah, I even found the fourth one to be entertaining. I haven't seen it since it first came out, so I can't say it holds up. But I found it entertaining when I watched it. So we'll see, because we are planning to do an Is It Yours on Lethal Weapon 3 soon. And that is where the quality started to drop. And then, because 1 and 2, I put them up against each other. They're both so good.
Yeah.
I go back and forth as to which is the better. But, you know, then 3, it dropped some, but I still found it to be good. And 4, it dropped more, but I still found it to be entertaining. So we'll see. You know, they were talking about doing a 5, but I think with Richard Donner passed away, it may never happen. And at this point, I mean, what are you going to do? It's, if nothing else, Murtaugh has to be retired.
Oh, by now.
It can't be that he's just holding on. Anyway, you want to bring this
in? I got for Christmas. I forgot.
What'd you get? Yeah, I didn't ask how your Christmas was. How thoughtless and self-centered of me. What was your Christmas like, my friend?
I got an Amity Police Department baseball cap from my cousin.
That's very cool. So you're working under Brody.
Yeah. Well, maybe I've succeeded him.
Maybe you can make the signs to stay off the beach. Beach closed.
Beach is closed. The moose out front should have told you.
All right. So, since we're already talking, hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro. That's Dave Pascarella. You're caught up now.
Welcome to Life in the Edge.
So I'm just going to, like, I was sitting thinking, having some philosophical thoughts about today's episode. And
that's when usually gets us in trouble.
When you think about the future, I was thinking about, like, there was the Carousel of Progress, the great, big, beautiful tomorrow. And yet, everything I read, every movie I see, everything about the future is dystopian in nature. There's very, very rarely like a beautiful tomorrow. It's always a very ugly tomorrow.
Even Star Trek went that way.
Star Trek started beautiful, but then right. it got ugly quick.
She got so real ugly.
But it's like I tell my wife, because she's very much a romantic when it comes to watching movies or TV shows. She always wants a happy ending. She always wants the couples to be together and be happy together. And I say to her, but if you don't have conflict, there's really not much story to tell. You know, that's why, like in a soap opera where they do an hour every day, you know, these couples get together and break up in the matter of a couple of weeks. Because yeah. You got to tell that story every day. If it's just, oh, look, they're happy. Now today they're going to the zoo and tomorrow they're going to do this. And, you know, it's just not entertaining.
Well, I don't mind the inverted bell curve where they have, you know, oh, it's good. Then there's a problem. But then, you know, it ends on an upbeat. I'm all right with that. I don't want to see something that ends depressing.
They usually, I mean, on the soap operas, at least, they usually go back and forth. But, and spoilers, when you have a series with a finite story, like, let's say, for example, The Sopranos or Breaking Bad, and your hero in the show is really kind of an anti-hero, can it end totally happy? Is it a cop-out to end totally happy?
I mean, I've never watched either one, to be honest with you.
Really?
No.
I'm surprised you never watched The Sopranos.
I maybe saw one or two episodes, and I hope that ended with them all going to prison. Hold on. What was the name of the movie we watched over the weekend about the train?
Train Dreams.
I have a recommendation.
What's it
if
called?
You have Netflix and you have, there's a movie called Train Days, she said. Horrible picture. Don't waste your time.
That's your hour. So your recommendation is don't watch.
Don't watch it. It's an hour and 43 minutes of your life you'll never get back. Take this as a public
service. Keep that in mind. That's... I'm going to do exactly that.
Needless to say, it was not a problem.
What was it? A rom-com or a...
I don't know what the hell it was.
Genre.
Depression was the genre. It was basically about a guy whose life was completely terrible. And you got to see him live through like 90 years of it.
So it was very realistic.
Well, I guess you could put on the news. Why would you need to watch a movie?
That is true too. Let's not talk about
I never watched Breaking Bad, and I've only seen maybe a handful of The Sopranos.
Well, I actually would say both series were excellent. I think Breaking Bad had an ending that was absolutely fitting without trying to put spoilers in it. I thought it definitely did a good job of bringing it home. The Sopranos and spoilers to an ending that was, 20 years ago. They ended The Sopranos with kind of a you decide what happens. You know, Tony Soprano, the gangster, had whoever was up against him towards the end, and he managed to get out of it. And then they show him and his family at a diner, and then bang, the screen goes blank. And they kind of said, it's up to you to decide what happened. But the popular theory is it went blank because someone put a hit on Tony and he got shot and he died right there. And that's why it went blank.
That's a cop-out, I think.
And I've always criticized that one for being a cop-out because, if you're going to have him get killed. And I don't really have a problem with that theory, with that doing that. I think they might have had a problem because he was, despite him being an anti-hero and a bad guy, he was very popular. And he was, presented in a way that made him very popular. So if they killed him off, I'm sure there would have been a lot of uproar over that. If they let him live, I'm sure there'd be a lot of uproar. So they took the cop out of, you know what, we're not going to do either. We're just going to let you decide for yourself, which I'm never a fan of. I don't want to be copping out myself to say, oh, I have no imagination and I can't do it. But if you're going to tell me a story, tell me a story.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, that's like you have a little kid at home and they want you to tell them a bedtime story. And you say, once upon a time, there were two people. You decided what happened to them. And now I'm going back downstairs and watch TV while you go to sleep.
Right. It's like cutting Star Wars at the trench run at the Death Star.
You'll have to decide if they got out.
Well, maybe he succeeded or maybe he got shot down.
Yeah, exactly. That, to me, that's the thing. And then there's this other thought of art where people say, like, you know, like if I were to sit down and do, if I was more talented than I am and I made a nice painting and you looked at it and you said, well, I see, you know, the overtones of death in this. Meanwhile, that was never my intention. You know, the people say, well, if that's your interpretation, then that's what it is. Not if that's not what I intended. I don't believe, you know, I'm not buying that. That's an accidental interpretation as far as I'm concerned.
Maybe you're wrong.
The person who sees death?
Yes. Maybe yeah. You're just wrong. Maybe you have a very negative attitude.
Yeah, that's you know, I think the artist's interpretation of his own work trumps, excuse me for using the word Trump, but trumps anybody else's interpretation. Because, you know, whatever the artist intended, that's what it is. Now, I do, you know, I kind of accept the thought, well, maybe subconsciously I was thinking this and, you know, now that you mention it, maybe, you know, I had been thinking of that, but no, I'm still not really buying it. It is what I intended it to be. If I intended it to be nebulous and you... Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know what movie has the best example of that? Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield, where he's got to write a book report on something, and he pays the author to come in and write about his book, and the professor's like, that's completely wrong. You know, so-and-so never would have said that.
Yeah, that was...
I forget who the author was. It was famous.
Yes, somebody whose book, who I read books by. And all of a sudden I'm drawing a blank.
But your paper sucked and I'm canceling your check.
Well, that was also in Annie Hall. Did you ever see Annie Hall?
No, I've never seen Annie Hall.
They have a scene where he's standing online for, I believe it's for a movie, and there's two know-it-alls talking, and there's this, oh, and this is what Marshall McLuhan thought, and he did this and he did that and he did that. And he just, like, Woody Allen, like, turns to the audience. He breaks the fourth wall. He's like, can you believe this guy pontificating on this? He doesn't know. And the guy gets all insulted. And then Woody Allen says, I just happen to have Marshall McLuhan right here. He reaches over and pulls the guy in. And the guy's like, you know nothing of my work.
See, that's great.
But, you know, to me, that, you know, I'm not buying the it is what you interpret it to be. That's what it is to you. I'll accept that. But to try and say that's the overall theme of something when it wasn't intended to be, I'm not on board with that.
Well, I'm sorry. If you're looking at a picture with unicorns and rainbows and happy-go-lucky stuff like that and you see death, I think maybe you need some counseling, my friend.
The only thing I'll ever do...
Borderline, maybe.
If I had the talent to do it, the only thing I would ever do is I'd make a man painting a picture of a man painting a picture of a man painting a picture. But what would be missing?
The man painting that picture. I've heard this somewhere before.
See, and that's how you interpret it.
Did you know I watched, you know, I'm watching all these old TV shows, $6 Million Man, Kolchak, The Night Stalker.
Love them.
He was the guest in like three programs back to back to back to back.
Dr. Hasseline? Series.
Yes.
Yeah, he was, whatever. And he speaking of soap operas, he was huge on The Young and the Restless.
Yes.
For years and years and years.
His name was Victor something.
Yes. Victor Newman.
Yes. That's wow. You got a great memory.
My ex used to watch it. And then she got me watching it with her for a while. That thing, I haven't seen it in years. But
been working for 50 years on that program.
Yeah, probably. And then I remember watching it and you know, he's like probably like close to 80 years old, and he goes into like a tough waterside bar, and he just he ends up beating up like two guys who are like in their 30s. And it's like, yeah, okay, this is realistic.
Did you ever watch Kolchak?
I saw the two movies, which are excellent.
Have you ever and done I've the seen, one? Is it yours?
No, I don't know if you remember when we were doing when we were doing an offshoot of Listen to the Prophets, and it was going to be called Boob Tubers.
Right.
And it was the whole concept, as you'll recall, is it was like Quantum Leap, where we were leaping from one TV movie to another, to a TV show, to whatever.
We recorded one.
And well, we recorded a Twilight Zone one with you.
Yes.
But we had also, we had done The Night Stalker and The Night Strangler. And unfortunately, those two episodes are lost to posterity. I keep talking to Bill because he had it on his hard drive. And he keeps saying, I think I could find it. I think I could find it. And I said, well, if you do, I'll release them as Is It Yours episodes. I'll just release them as bonus episodes. If
screw it. Let's do the vampire one from Kolchak. I love that movie.
I think, honestly, if we do it, I'd want to do the two. I'd want to do Good. The Night Stalker and the Night Strangler because I have a tough time saying which one I like more.
I have saved that movie for when I'm done with the TV show, the second one. I've never seen it. That's like my, I'm saving that.
Well, just with, again, I'll try and make this relatively spoiler-free, but one of the main characters in it is played by Richard Anderson, who is Oscar, not Oscar Goldman. Or is it Oscar? Yeah, it is Oscar Goldman on $6 Million
Oscar
Man.
Goldman.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait.
If I had to do it tomorrow, I might give you a different order, but I think I like The Night Strangler slightly more than The Night Stalker.
I'll have to see when I get there. As soon as I finish the series, I'm more than halfway through, I'm going to watch The Strangler because I have the two movies on DVD.
And just as long as we're talking TV shows, if you, I don't know if you've watched yet, but I would give a very high recommendation. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed Peacemaker.
I have to get that. I don't have HBO Max.
Okay.
I used to have access and then no more.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. No. Well, I can get it, but when Amanda leaves, it goes with her.
I have to say, I would call it NSFT, is what we call it. Not safe for Tina, my wife, because it is a little, does have, has quite a bit of gratuitous violence in it. And she just, that turns her off very quickly. So I was watching them as I was doing the treadmill every day, and I watched the two seasons.
We, are almost done with Stargirl.
I still have to go back and watch those. I saw the first season and haven't seen since.
We finished season two on Monday.
There are three seasons, right?
Yes. And I'm very disappointed that there's only three because it's really fun.
Season one was excellent. I know that.
Season two blows.
We did an episode on it. We did an episode of the show, Scott, Bill, and I, on Stargirl, and we all loved it. Season two blows away season one?
Blows it away. I mean, one is great. Two is phenomenal.
Okay, I got to watch that. Just another one to put on my queue.
Yeah, it's so much fun, and there's so many like moments where you go, oh, my God, I can't believe they're going here.
That's what I get a big kick out of when they go places that you know that years ago you know they would have been afraid to go.
It's great.
All right, so today we're looking into dystopia once again, looking dystopia right in the mouth. Oof. And I'll say up front, you know, I thought your issue was very, very interesting in creating a backdrop and a history for the series that we hadn't gotten yet. So I think you have a pivotal issue, and I'm going to say I think that was the first issue I ever saw on the newsstand, and that is, outside of issue number one, probably the most iconic Commandy cover.
This issue, for me, brought it around again. I have to tell you, I was starting after a while to feel like, but this one was fantastic. I'm not going to bury the lead.
All right. Well, why don't you give us a synopsis?
All right. I bring to the table for your approval, Commandy, the Last Boy on Earth, issue number 16. Cover date, April of 1974. On sale, January 10th of 74. And still for a whopping 20 cents. This is written and penciled and edited by Jack Kirby. Inker and letterer, Bruce Berry. And the title of this issue is The Hospital. This story is best described by Shakespeare when he says, "What's past is prologue." Well, maybe in this book it was said by William Shakespeare. Just a reminder, the animals have taken over the world. In this magazine, it has happened. A great natural disaster has pulled a fantastic switch. Men roam in herds. They are hunted, captured, and used like beasts. This is how it may have happened. As Comanche prowls down a stone corridor in ancient Washington, D.C., in search of his friends, he comes upon a kennel-like area filled with captured humans in cages. The area is marked experimental animals. Biochemical research section. As he approaches the caged men, they paw at him, as with apes in the zoo. Comanche berates them for not using their brains to escape their captivity. Almost too late, he hears footfalls behind him. He spins, firing off a shot to warn away an ape. Despite his efforts, a second gorilla arrives, and Comanche is captured. The orderly apes take the talking human to the professor for examination. In the hospital, an ape scientist is hard at work in his lab when Comanche is brought in. Comanche refuses to speak, and the professor is unsure of the credibility of the orderly's report. After all, the staff has been overworked since the trouble with the tigers. But the professor is intrigued. To him, Comanche looks rather intelligent for an animal. His eyes are alert and aware, as if he comprehends. The professor takes Comanche, explaining that kindness breeds confidence. And Comanche will find that Professor Hahnemann practices what he preaches. Just a note of interest. Hahnemann, I looked it up, is a revered Hindu deity, a divine monkey-faced forest dweller known for his immense strength, courage, and selfless devotion. Outside the hospital, battle rages between the tigers and the apes. Hahnemann finds it strange that Comanche should appear on this night and takes Comanche into his confidence and begins to tell Comanche a story from long ago. There was another doctor, very much like Hahnemann. Strange things were happening to him as well. The doctor's world was dying, even as he was creating a miracle. A senior gorilla scientist interrupts to compare Hahnemann's foolishness to the ancient scientist of long ago, and he orders Comanche locked up. Hahnemann insists that he has created cortextin, a brain stimulant. The chief resident laughs at Hahnemann and orders him upstairs to help deal with the casualties that are coming in. When he is alone, Professor Hahnemann unlocks his desk and takes out the diary of Dr. Michael Grant, written in the opening stages of the great disaster. His story parallels Hahnemann's. He invented cortextin, despite the dismissal of his superior. The events of the present begin to repeat the cyclical events in Dr. Grant's diary. Hahnemann understands that at one time gorillas were kept in cages and used for experiments. Grant claims that gorillas gained manlike intelligence by accident. At this point, Hahnemann departs for the surgery to deal with the incoming casualties. As Commandy demands release from his cage, Dr. Grant's monologue mirrors current events. As the terrible sounds of the great disaster are filtering into the hospital, the research animals seem to sense it coming, and we see the same reaction of Commandy and the caged humans. Dr. Grant speaks of WizKid, a new animal, very much like Commandy. The battle continues to rage between the gorillas and the tigers, and through the use of a commandeered cannon by the tigers, the human cage is breached. Dr. Grant records that the hospital has been shaken by a giant tremor. The great disaster is upon us. All thought of research has been abandoned. Like others on staff, Dr. Grant is doing his best to help with the incoming casualties, as Hahnemann does the same at present. The last moments are the worst. In the present, gorilla doctors struggle to save gorilla lives. In his last entry, Dr. Grant continues, "I write this only because of the animals. I write it only because they will give my death some meaning. They have inherited the gift. As the animals escape, they are led by WizKid through the flooded basement. In the basement water was spilled the contents of the chemical mixture Grant had managed to complete. Cortexin is powerful stuff. The animals that slipped in the water were bound to have swallowed some. Cortexin acts lightning swift. There is a shock to the brain, then a strange calm, an expansion of thought. Grant witnesses the animals evolve in thought before him, particularly WizKid. The effects of Cortexin will be passed down to the animal's offspring. In his final thoughts, Grant theorizes that the escaped animals from the zoo will flee the disaster and will stop and drink from this stream. Man's world is ending, but what has begun, Grant will never know, for the hour of judgment has arrived for man." As Hahnemann watches Commandy and the humans escape through the water laden with Cortexin, Hahnemann thinks how he, like Grant, has offered these animals the same gift. As Hahnemann meets his final judgment, Commandy searches for Tufton. Now, this was an exciting, well-written, and just a cool way they played this out, I think.
I totally agree. I don't remember ever reading this before. I don't think I ever did, even though, like I said, this is the first cover I ever remember seeing. I had thought perhaps this was the first issue I had ever purchased, but I have no memory of it. And I, quite frankly, in 1974, I don't know if I would have appreciated this as much as I do now, because I wouldn't have had the background and everything with the first 15 issues to have really taken this all in. And then you top it off with, it almost feels to me like a Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah,
where you know they came up with that drug that made the apes, you know, it tapped into some part of their brain and gave them the intelligence to kind of take over the world, and it's you know very very similar in its own way. I wonder if that's you know I was wondering if like this influenced them this storyline because it really is so well done, and then the parallels to it. The only disappointment from that end is the parallels would lead you to believe that this is starting the wheels rolling for the humans to take over the world again. And I, you know, because it's an ongoing series and because of the nature of it, you know, they're never going to go there. What I would have liked to have seen was, you know, at least this lays the seeds where things start to develop as far as that goes. The humans that have been robbed of their ability to speak and think clearly, that, you know, they start showing more of an intelligence, while the primitive animals that are or have gained intelligence don't necessarily have to lose theirs. And now you could have a real war going kind of for control of the planet. So, I mean, that's where I would have liked to have seen the series go, but I don't think it's going to. I think this is giving us a background as to how things went at the time of the great disaster, but I don't think it's going to take us further along this storyline. I think we're going to move on from it, unfortunately.
Yeah. For all we know, this might be the highlight of it. You know,
Very well, maybe, because this is really good, so... If this was the highlight, that's not necessarily saying something bad.
What's interesting is, and I wouldn't be surprised if Planet of the Apes ripped this off, the second part of the puzzle that you didn't seem to get, at least until recently in the Planet of the Apes series, was, okay, we see why apes rose up, but what's the reason for the complete downfall of man that makes him mutant?
Yes. The recent, you know, rebooting has given us that.
Right.
The original five did not.
You know, I can understand how the apes could get up and be on top, but that you get knocked so low that you don't know how to speak, that's...
It's one of the criticisms we've had regularly with this series, though, is that they're very inconsistent on humans' ability to speak or not. Certain ones can, certain ones can't. And with as many as they show that can, it's really kind of surprising when they show, you know, the gorilla or the tiger or whatever, saying, can you believe this? That human is speaking. You know, it's like, well, you know, just go around the corner. There's another one.
Right. You know what I was thinking about reading this today? You know, sometimes, you know, wacky thoughts just come to me. What do these animals eat?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't think they ever really thought that out, but I guess, you know, you could just say they're all vegetarians.
Otherwise, I'll take the human on the left, medium well.
But yeah, I don't, in real life, tigers are meat eaters. Lions are meat eaters. Are apes?
I don't think they are. But I was thinking more of the tigers and the lions.
And bears. Oh, my.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that is certainly, pardon the pun, food for thought. But it's, I assume that they're not... I mean, they haven't given us any thought of them being cannibals at this point. I don't know this D. Bruce Berry, who is listed as giving a helping hand on the inking. I'm not familiar with him at all. And the next issue, he has a heavier hand in it. So my opinion's going to change somewhat. But I really liked the inking in this issue. I thought it was very well handled. I thought... You know, it smoothed out certain of the Kirby rough edges. It gave, you know, I think a lot of the detail is there and well presented. So I really like the art in this issue as well as the story.
It all fits very well together.
Yeah. And we are going to revisit that a little bit in a few minutes when we get to my issue where Barry, like I said, had a much heavier hand in the inking, and I don't think it went quite as well. Yes. So I don't know. I don't know what the breakdown between him and Royer was as far as inking this book, but I do like the final product a lot.
Yeah.
The one thing I would have changed is I didn't care for the lettering of the the journal, just because it's I mean, it's in cursive, which I guess if you have, you know, kids today, they may not even know how to read it. but I don't know. I would rather it had been a different font, you know, just a little cleaner than that. But I mean, the whole idea was to make it look like it's the diary. But it became a little bit of work to read it at moments because of the font. So, and that's really looking for something to complain about. It's an extremely minor complaint.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with the handwriting. I thought it fit in.
But I'm a little surprised that Kirby went to give a background on all of this. And the parallel was very good too. I just kind of wish, as I said, that the parallel carried through, which I don't think it's going to. Other than that, no complaints at all.
No, I really like the character of Hanuman.
Yeah. And he is deceased at the end, right? I mean,
he
possibly survived. Because I wouldn't mind if they brought him back.
I took it, it was through whatever destiny, he was mirroring the life of Dr. Grant.
Yeah.
Because they both had the same attitude, you know, almost like a compassion to these animals on both ends.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't view them as lab subjects so much. And, you know, immediately when Commandy comes in, I almost said Kazar, when Commandy comes in, you know, he recognizes, like, the intelligence in his eyes and treats him differently than he would if he thought he was, you know, a brainless animal.
But yet you still get the feeling towards him, at least I did, that even if he thought he was a brainless animal, he wouldn't have been unnecessarily cruel to him.
Yeah, I don't think he would have been cruel. He wouldn't have necessarily shown him the same deference, I don't think.
Right.
But I don't think he would have been cruel, I agree.
I also get a kick out of the banter they put in there. Oh, you know, you sure you heard this animal speak? You know, I know we're all overworked. But what, you know, just like regular people would be having a discussion like this. We're underpaid.
But again, they haven't seen enough animals speaking. This is still such a surprise to them.
It seems like they're spaced out. You know, like maybe this group never came across a speaking one.
I guess.
But it does seem like there's an incredible number of speaking humans. Not to mention like the Ben Boxes of the world.
Yeah. I assume we're going to see them again at some point.
I would think. And Dr. Zaius is, you know, Dr. Zaius, pretty much.
It feels like you should go into the song.
No, but this, you know, I enjoyed this one. This kind of restored my faith in this series a bit.
Yeah, well, that's good. You know, I was looking at it and I started saying, well, I got to try and keep in mind when there's a crossover, when Commandy appears in Brave and the Bold or World's Finest or DC Comics Presents, but we still have a ways to go. I think the first time he crosses over in one of them is like around issue 30 or so of Commandy. So we still have a ways to go. But I would like to continue with the continuity. So I want to, whenever that issue comes up, I would like to do it in line with when it came out.
I would like to see, I'm sure they don't do it, but I would have liked to have seen a flashback book where you would have actually seen the events unfolding as opposed to just the diary. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm not sure we're ever going to see that. I think they wanted to keep the great disaster as, you know, somewhat of a mystery.
And they keep it right till the end when they show you they're in Walter Reed Hospital. Should we rate this?
I'm ready if you are.
I'm ready. The story in this book is an A+. It's a home run right out of the park. It's a fascinating story in and of itself. But the way it's told you know, with the cycles repeating themselves. It's fantastic. It's really, this was the first page turn for me in this. I thought the art was fairly strong. I am still not a Kirby fan, but I thought this was better than most. And I gave it a solid B+. And the cover, it's right out of the book. I feel it. It sucks you in. It's just intriguing. Cover's a solid A. And I'm going to rate this as an A+ overall because, hey, I get to make my own rules at rating.
Yes, you do. Yeah, I'm pretty much on board with you. I think the cover's an A+. I think this really is just excellent. Just the image, again, it's in the book, but it's also a poster image. The gorillas in it, you know, coming towards them look great. The humans in the cell, you know, there's just enough detail there to make them look threatening. You know, Commandy's got a bold position. My biggest complaint about it is the fact that the picture cuts off 2/3 of the way through and just is blank for the rest of the way, you know, where the title comes. The story is an A+. No question. I thought this was an excellent story. And the artwork, I think, is really, really solid. I think it's an A artwork book. So I'm going to rate it overall as an A+ book, just like you.
Excellent.
Now, I unfortunately don't have one that's quite as good as that. I have number 17, which is cover dated May of 1974, also with a 20-cent cover price. And the cover shows Commandy being lowered into a hole by a rope by gorillas who are watching clawed hands coming up from the ground waiting to grab Commandy. And the top of it tells us the apes have found a way to get rid of the gophers. They used people, which makes me just think of Soylent Green. I don't know.
It's people.
The story is titled The Human Gophers of Ohio. Maybe Sean knows them. It's written and penciled by Kirby, inked by... Actually, it's listed in the DC Wiki page as being Mike Royer and D. Bruce Berry again, even though the credits only list D. Bruce Berry, and it's lettered by D. Bruce Berry. The story opens with Commandy actually fighting some gorillas, and they overwhelm him and take him down and bring him into a transport. As they're going with the transport where the humans are going to be used for some unknown purpose, they encounter a landslide, and in the back of the transport is the humans are all tied up and caged, but with the transport being bounced around, Commandy manages to get a hold of I don't know if it's a shovel or a hoe or something along those lines. And he uses the edge of it to cut away at his ropes. And then he frees a bunch of the savage humans that are on board. They eventually stop the transport and the gorillas open up the back of it. And the humans burst out. But Commandy, who was kind of just beaten up through this whole process, you know, staggers out and they take him down again. So he's the only one left as a prisoner at this point. And then we cut to Tufton, who's looking for Commandy, but ready to give up because, you know, he can only use so much of his troops' power to search for him. So they decide to move on. Then we get to the next chapter of the story, which is called Vanishville. And the transport arrives where some guerrilla troops are dealing with gopher holes. And they're trying to flood them. They're trying to do different things. You could see at some point, like, they have supplies, and these two clawed hands come up out of the ground and grab them and pull them down into the ground with them. So eventually we get to what happened on the cover, and they lower Commandy into the hole with a box tied to his back. He gets down to the bottom where there's these gopher-like creatures, And they take the box off of Commandy's back and open it and find bombs within. And they're clearly not very intelligent creatures because one of them starts chewing on it. He starts saying that they're bad. Commandy is, that is, says that. And the gophers start repeating, bad, bad, bad. Commandy comes up with a plan for the gophers. And they say, whoopee doopy, we have fun. And eventually, it's almost like out of a Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner cartoon. They take the bombs that the gorillas sent down, and they throw them back up to where the gorillas are, where they explode, which feels very Wile E. Coyote-like.
Sponsored by Acme.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only thing that would make it is if the bomb said Acme on it. So, you know, the gophers seem to appreciate that Commandy helped them. So they start saying, good, 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 good. Blah, 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 blah. And then the gorillas try to send some poison gas down, but they get out of there. And then they come across this giant Kirby Tech machine. And Commandy's trying to figure out what the purpose is for it. And the ending of the story says, Commandy will find out real fast, and so will you. Coming the Eater, on sale during the second week in March. So I was a little unclear as to whether these are mutated gophers who developed, you know, anthropomorphic features like the other animals in this book, or if these are supposed to be mutated humans. They don't seem to make that totally clear.
Now, Commandy calls them humans, right? Doesn't he refer to them as people?
He does.
And that's the farthest thing I would have thought. Oh, yeah, it's a human face. Not one that I've ever seen.
It's an ugly human face. It looks like a human face, like, made out of cement.
Yeah, but I don't know why you would think these are humans.
So this felt to me like, it's like a bridge story. Like, we had the very strong history-based story before it in the last issue that, you know, we sang the praises of. And now Kirby has to move on. He can't keep building on that humans getting greater intelligence thing like we were just talking about. So now where am I going to go? Okay, I'm gonna take this to a whole new thing of creatures, so I'm going to introduce these gopher creatures to the story. So it's like, okay, where are we going to go and what's it going to happen? And it does, my interest has been piqued again, don't get me wrong, but I am a little disappointed that they're not building on what they did in the last issue.
There's no building whatsoever.
No, they totally just sweep that under the carpet, basically.
You know, it's like you got the impression coming out, well, at least I did, that, you know, these humans that went through that water were going to have some effect from the Cortexin. And it looks like
that's what I would have liked to have seen.
Nothing. In fact, Commandy gets captured so easy, I'm starting to have doubts about his intelligence levels, to be blunt with you.
There is a level of repetition with him fighting these people off. And by people, I mean the lions and the bears and tigers and whatever. And the battles that he has with them seem a bit repetitive. Not necessarily in a terrible way, because I think you can only, you know, you have to start each story off somewhere. And, you know, he's in theory the last boy on Earth, even though there's other humans around. So he's going to end up in battles. So, you know, I liked where Kirby went with the last issue. I would have liked to have seen maybe building on that. And you could have a slow buildup where humans start showing a level of recovery, but that they're not quite
right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. The trip was interesting. I got a real vibe off of the trip of Damnation Alley.
That's an interesting, I wouldn't have thought of that, but yeah, that's
the weird vehicle traveling through all this crazy terrain with all these pitfalls and et cetera, et cetera.
I
question
the fight.
Go ahead.
The what? I think there may have been a little bit of a lost opportunity there with these other humans that were in the transport, and you know they open the doors and they just escape, and that's that. They're done with the in the story. So I think he could have done a little bit more with that.
You know, it actually is kind of a bit of, you know, command these comeuppance, where he's so, oh, you know, you're all so stupid. If you had a brain, you'd be able to get your binds off too. And yet he's the one that they capture once again. The stupid ones all escape.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, I mean, maybe you shouldn't be shooting off your mouth quite so much.
And it's kind of funny. He's the only one that's gagged too.
Well, he's the only one who could speak.
I also question the financial wisdom of, you know, these humans seem to be wandering around all over the place, of shipping them all the way from Washington to Ohio.
Yeah, they really didn't do a good job of explaining why they needed to do that, what the purpose was in bringing them there. But, you know, it's, I guess whatever. That's, it just moved the story along. Why it had to be in Ohio, I still don't even know. Is, you know, I'll need to ask Sean. Are gophers a particularly big thing in Ohio as opposed to other areas? I have been noticing in my backyard some of the grass has been, there's some holes in there. I'm thinking it's squirrels trying to hide nuts, but maybe I have gophers.
Maybe you have... massively clawed humans who are, you know, down there digging around.
I have the go-go gophers in there, and they're out to get me.
All I could say is thank God they had clawed hands and not clawed reins, because you'd never see them coming.
And for those of you who don't know, Claude Rains played the Invisible Man in the original 1930-whatever movie.
Gosh.
All right. Are we ready to rate again?
Go for it.
Okay. I like the cover. I don't love the cover. I think there's a lot of blank space around the sides that could have been... something could have been done with it. I guess it's trying to create the darkness of the cave, but I don't know. Like I said, I like it. I don't love it. I'm going to say B minus. It's not bad, but it's not great. The interior art, and then, yeah, I wanted to mention this also because I see it looks like it's inked very, very much in the I'm going to darken the lines inking method as opposed to I'm going to try to embellish what's in front of me. Now, I have to say embellishing on Kirby, who, you know, like him, hate him, love him, whatever, you know, he is a legend in the industry. And by the time this came out, he was already a legend in the industry. And I don't know this, you know, D. Bruce Berry. So maybe he was a little intimidated to kind of do stuff. But it feels, like I said, like, very much like he just took the lines and took India ink and filled in those lines. So I don't really see much that makes me feel like it's embellished in any way. So the interior art, it's good, but not great. You know, I'm kind of like where I am on the cover. So I'm going to say a B minus. The story, it's almost like this story is hurt by the fact that it followed up such a good story. I think on its own, if we were just doing one issue at a time and we just did this issue, I'd probably be higher on this story than I am. I like the introduction of the gophers. And I like the way they're presented, and I feel like you can go somewhere with them, but I think it needs to go somewhere. Like if it's just, you know, next issue, all of a sudden they're done and we never see them again, I'm going to be disappointed. But I do think there's some potential there. And the fact that it's not just brainless scavengers, because they've kind of bonded with Commandy now, and they're following his lead. So I think that there's, again, there's just some ability for it to be pretty interesting. And I'm going to say a regular B on the story. And overall, I'm going to give the book a B, even though I gave B minuses on the other two.
I'll go with you on the beef of the story. And like I said, I think the most interesting aspect for me was the trip. I got that real Damnation Valley, not Damnation Alley, which folks should look that up. That's another dystopian movie from the late 70s, I believe. And just the different environments and the pitfalls they were showing. I found that interesting. The Gophers, I don't know. I was a little disappointed in the Gophers. I think I would have enjoyed it more if they were more, you know, anthropomorphic Gophers, you know, wearing, you know, army uniforms or something like that might have been entertaining. But I'll go along with the B on the story. I'm not as high on the art, the cover. I got to be honest with you. Other than the drama of him being lowered down to these unseen clawed creatures, Commandy looks messed up to me. His face looks, I don't know, off. It almost reminds me of, you know, a young Ricardo Montalban, Khan, being lowered down with that head of hair. It's other than that, it's a pretty not exciting cover to me. A bunch of rock formations, three apes, and claws. I don't think this would have attracted me. For that reason, I'm going to give the cover a C. The interior art, I don't think, is as good as the last one. I think you're right. There's a lot of heavy lining put in there, and I think it detracts from the art. And again, I'm not a Kirby mark, so I'm going to give the interior art I'm going to give it a C plus for an overall grade on this book of a B minus, because the story is, it's all right.
All right, that's fair. I would just, as a side thing, I just mentioned, if you get the chance, look up some Kirby penciled pages. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at them pencil, I generally prefer my books in a finished manner. I prefer them to be inked and colored and glossy paper. If you know, I'm on board with all of that stuff. But if you look at Kirby's pencils, I think it's easier to appreciate the quality of the work when you just look at his raw pencils as opposed to the finished product. So I'm going to give you that as a homework assignment between now and the next Commandy episode, that you just take a look at some penciled Kirby pages, preferably of Commandy issues, so you can really get a feel for them and see what you think.
I will do that.
And before we sign out, I would just mention we got another email from our friend Socrates. And he just said, hi, Bins. Happy New Year's. Best wishes to you, your families, an awesome show for 2026 and beyond. One very interesting part of our great shared hobby of comic collecting recently popped up again for me. I shelled out for a few comics to complete runs via my comicshop.com. One of these comics was a short-lived late 90s series I loved when I was 14 called Mutant X. I've been picking these up in cheap bins and only needed the final issue. I paid $3 for the final issues, and 3 days later it surfaced in a cheap bin I was thumbing through. What are the odds? I've literally been on the search for issue 32 for 14 to 15 years, buy it online and find it a few days later for 50 cents. Crazy. I'd love to hear similar stories from the group. God bless and happy New Year's, Socrates in Tennessee. Socrates, you were talking about one of the banes of this hobby, because I've talked about how my wife doesn't understand the joy of the search. So a lot of times when she stops at the comic book store with me, and she's very much supportive of the hobby and an enabler. But when I see a book that I need, and I look at it and I put it back and I say, no, that's too much money, and it's, you know, a book for $5 or something, and she's like, well, you could afford $5, so just go ahead and buy it. And my thought was, it's not book I want to pay $5 for. And that's happened a lot. And, you know, like I said, I'm very happy with her supportive nature when it comes to my collecting, but she doesn't understand the joy of the search, that you want to find it at the right price. And a lot of times I, as you did, Socrates, have been down to needing like one issue of a series or two issues, or, you know, down to just a couple that I'm having an impossible time finding. So when I finally can get it, even though it's priced more expensive than I'd like, I'll buy it, and then I find it at a cheaper price. Exactly what happened to you after I already spent money for it. It's, you know, it's the nature of the beast. I'm trying to think of a specific example, and I'm coming up blank. I know with a lot of those, the issues that, you know, you'd call commons, I was talking to one of the guys in the stores, and he was telling me that a lot of times, you know, they buy collections, and a lot of the collections they buy are, you know, 90% the books that are going into the cheap bins, and then 10% of the ones, yeah, 10% might get graded or put into a more expensive area. But they end up with a lot of volume on these cheap bin books, and a lot of the stores just don't have the space to have that much in the way of cheap bins. So a lot of times they'll be down in the basement, or they'll be in a storage facility or whatever. So even though they're common issues that you should be able to find easily, it's very, very, very difficult to find them at a reasonable price. And, you know, nowadays, when you're talking about issues like that, it isn't even worthwhile to try and go to mycomicshop.com or, you know, eBay or whatever, because then you're adding shipping to the equation on a book that you're looking to get for a buck. So, yeah, you're preaching to the choir, my friend. That's all I can say.
Well, it's a shame, as you know, I get all my pre-orders from my comic shop, and they used to have a policy where it was if you had, you know, a pre-order coming, you could then buy back issue stuff, and they would just hold it till they shipped, you know, the other order, and then you saved on the shipping. Now that's not the case anymore. It's by how much you, it used to be flat rate shipping. Now it's by what you buy, you pay.
Yeah. So, you know, I've filled in a lot of the cheap bins on my cheap books on my want list. My list doesn't include nearly as many cheap books as it used to. Now it's all the high priced items. Yeah. So, you know, I am rarely coming home with the volume that I used to come home with when I went to a show. But it's always fun when you find one. That's all I could say.
Yeah, pretty much everything is in the expensive range now. And some of it, you know, you sit there and you go back and forth. Do I want to pay this? Or do I want to pass up the opportunity? You know, it may not come down the road again.
If I pay it, do I want my wife to know that I paid it? Oh, did I say that out loud?
For me, we're separate money, so that doesn't matter to me. But thank you for writing in, Socrates.
Yes, and just so everybody knows, because I know the closing thing, which we really desperately need to update, says to write it at, was it's bins at twotruefreaks.com. That is not the email address that I actually get email on. I get it back to the bins at gmail.com. So if anybody's interested in writing, and we'd love to hear from you.
Would that explain why we don't get much email?
It's possible. You know, we had access to that email box, but somehow I lost it. I think I tried to go into it and I wasn't able to get access to it anymore. So again,
the password 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Don't give away all my secrets, Dave. All right. On that note, now that I have to go change the password, I think I'm going to call it quits to tonight's episode. Thank you, Dave, for joining us to our trip to once again trip to dystopia, and thank you everybody for taking the trip with us as well. And we'll see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
Well, that was fun.